Hi everyone, just checking you can hear me. Let me know. Good, thanks, Sam. Thanks, Miriam. Hello.
Hi, Carrie.
Hello, Joan.
Good to see you.
Thank you, good to see you too.
Hi,
Hi, Archie. Hi, Bonnie.
Gayatri. Hello,
Hello.
everyone. Hi. How are you, Carrie?
Yeah, I'm great. Thank you. Sorry, I'm a bit echoey, aren't I?
Just a little. Are you in a cave?
No, I'm in a hotel room. Well, it's kind of like a house, but it's not the best. I mean, the house is fine, but it's really, really hot here at the moment. I know I say that every time, but it's just getting hotter and hotter. And I've just moved to 45 minutes outside the city because I'm starting to attend a different Muay Thai school. And so I'm just in this like Airbnb type housey thing for a little while. And I have to sit in the bedroom because it's the only room with air con. And in order for the air con to work, I have to shut all the windows. And the windows are all colored glass, so it's really dark. Gosh, listen to me complain. And if I want to sit out where is reasonable light, there's no air con and the windows don't work. So even if there was air con, I couldn't put it on anyway.
You're just knowing what the contrast of what you don't want. So when you move to where you do want, it's going to be so light and bright and airy and
Oh
gorgeous.
gosh, yeah. So I've got a resort on my side. But you know, I tell you, I had a proper dilemma, you see, because when I was deciding where to stay. This is a 3 minute drive from the Muay Thai school, and the other place is a 7 minute drive from the Muay Thai school. And that's 15 minutes a day extra driving. That's a lot with my
You have
schedule.
to
So that's why I
miss
picked this place.
time and space soon. Tomorrow, you won't
Well,
have that issue.
this is it. It's today. It's today.
I created it today because I was staying at a friend's overnight and I said I wanted to have more than enough time when I got home. Make smoothie, start the wash, blah, blah, blah. And I created more time.
Fabulous. Well, when I was packing my room today, because I left the Muay Thai school today, I was like, right, I imagine it would take me an hour and a half. It's going to take me an hour.
So we're already doing it.
That's before we have the wonderful.
It in the future, so we already know it now.
Yeah, well, that's before we have the wonderful attunements and the excellent guidance by Peter in the workshop this afternoon. So we're guessing how to do this stuff until then. Hey, Peter.
No, we already got it because we had it in the future, and the future's creating now. So we already know how to do it. That's why I created it this morning, because I'm like, I already have the attunement because it's in the
Fabulous. Well, Peter, I think this might be a popular workshop today. So let's get going so that we're not delayed and we can let everyone have that wonderful workshop this afternoon. Peter, can you talk to me just to make sure I can hear you? Can't hear you. You might need to select the right microphone.
Afternoon, the workshop.
Sorry?
What time is the workshop this afternoon?
It's always 30 minutes after the hour. So we start the Q&A now for an hour, and then it's 30 minutes after that. So wherever you are, it will
Right.
be that time.
You stay on the same Zoom link?
No, you have to register. because it's for the magical membership. So if you are a member, you have to register in order to get the link. If you are not a member, then you can still join us, and it's a separate link, and you can buy the workshop as a one-off and then join us for that.
Yeah, I am with the magical group, but I'm not sure how, so the link that I use on Sunday I can use for this afternoon.
No, this is different. It's the magical membership. So those people who are joining the membership get to join a workshop every month.
Okay. I'll have to make sure that I try and get on it.
Yeah. If you want to join the workshop this afternoon, you can.
Yes.
You can just buy that as a one-off. Or if you want to join the membership so that you can come to next month, you can do that also.
I'm in the membership, but I'm a bit thick with regards to computers.
So you are a magical membership. You're a member already, are you, Joan?
No, she's not. She's confused. Sorry, Joan.
Because we're buddies.
No, she's a student because she's on the Ultimate Healing, and there's a confusion between magical membership and the Ultimate Healing student group. So, Joan, you're not currently. This is a different subscription that you pay monthly, which is totally separate. Mm. And then it's about $35 a month that takes automatically out. And you get the class separately, which is a different Zoom link. So if you want to join, you can.
Thank you. Yeah? Okay, I'll join.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
So I'll just ask the admin to put the right link in the chat then, please, for those who are not already a member of the monthly magical membership. You can still join us for the Mastery of Time workshop that Peter will be facilitating soon, which many people are excited about. So if you want to join us and you are not already a member, then the link will be put in the chat now. And of course, if you are a member, you should have received your email so that you can register to get the link. Sorry, what was that?
I don't think I've got my email to register for this afternoon. You've frozen now.
No, I haven't frozen. I'm just reading the message that has come through. So can I just ask the admin to make sure that the email was sent out to everybody as well, please, to make sure that they have that so that they can register? Joyce, sorry, I don't understand. Oh, okay, I get it. I understand now. Don't worry, you're not late. Peter's struggling with his sound. We can't hear him.
Can't hear me yet.
Got you now.
Can you hear me now? Good.
Yep.
Is the button on the side to turn up? Can you still hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you wonderfully now.
Good. Okay. Okay.
Welcome back to Kopanyang.
Hello.
So before we do hand over to Peter, who will be talking today about understanding time and the higher dimensions, just a couple of notices from me. But first of all, as I just said, the link, if you just want to join the one-off workshop today, has just gone in the chat, Mastery of Time. So Peter will be teaching us how to condense time, expand time, get more energy with what it is that we want to do in our time so we can do more, we can feel vitalized, we can feel energetic when we have things to do, and how to bend time as well. I cannot wait for this. No one type anything in the chat because I'm just going to be like this, like learning myself. just while I remember, for those of you that might have already gained access to the handout, a revised version of the handout has been put into the online portal for today's session. So please do make sure that you look at the right version of the handout. And also, there was a very interesting article that Peter wrote and that was distributed via the newsletter to do with today's topic, which is understanding time and higher dimensions. So if you have not already read that article, you might like to do so. Well, a couple of things to say.
You don't have time before we start, but, you know, have a quick look.
but then you can look at it later, is what I'm saying. Just a couple of other things to just make you aware of if you haven't yet had the chance to have a look at the newsletter that has gone out. So starting on the 10th of June, we have the online point holding course starting. So those of you who couldn't join us in Thailand, or those of you who are interested in continuing or starting again your point holding experience, Peter will be guiding you all through how to do the actual point holding element of the Ultimate Healing Course. So this starts on the 10th of June. So those people who have completed the online version of part one, you're welcome to join us for part two. Information coming. But just to let you know, that starts on the 10th of June. And also those of you who have been doing the ongoing online point holding with Peter, that will still carry on as well. And those people will be able to join us. There is an opportunity for some more in-person point holding as well, because Peter will be going to Europe again. He will be in Amsterdam. Are you going to Amsterdam?
No, yes. It'll be Essen. Essen itself. It's a couple of hours from Amsterdam.
He'll be in Holland. Doing the online version. Doing in-person point holding 17th to the 22nd of July. So if you would like to make the trip, or you are already in Amsterdam, then you might like to join Peter and Gerrit, who will be hosting that course 17th to the 22nd of July. And it's just for 1 week. There will also be the opportunity to join the Love and Relationships workshop, which you'll be facilitating on the 29th and 30th of July as well. And Peter is going to be in Germany in August. He'll be facilitating the Darkness course, where you get to learn how to work with the Dark Elves, and also the Voodoo course. And this is happening on the 5th and 6th and the 7th and 8th. So if you fancy either of those in person, Peter will be there and you are welcome to join. All right. And we do have a couple of other workshops that will be coming up over the next couple of months, just to let you know, just to wet your whistle. In July, we've got your multidimensional self and how to work with it. In August, we've got safe dealing with authorities. There's a date change for that, but don't worry about that just now. And also in September, we've got higher self and how to manifest with it more effectively. So those are some exciting topics to look forward to coming in the magical membership. That is definitely enough from me. Peter, I'm going to hand over to you, please.
Okay.
Today's topic, which is understanding time and higher dimensions.
Okay. Hi there, Megan. That was my spotlight. Here we are. Okay. So hope you read my recent article. If not, no, we're going to kind of talk more about that anyway. But basically, I'm going to be talking over the next few months a bit more about understanding these different dimensions, because there's information out there which is quite confusing to people. A lot of people are here these days talking about entering a fifth dimension, yet it seems they don't really know what they're talking about. So I'm trying to explain dimensions here. So in my recent blog, I spoke about understanding the fourth and fifth dimensions to give you a start, but actually there's more dimensions than that. But I have to start with the fourth. To try and explain that, you've realised that although we are in a three-dimensional reality, this space curves in a fourth dimension. So imagine if you're a two-dimensional being and you have a flat surface, you wouldn't actually see if it curves in another dimension. See, this to you is flat, but it might curve this way, and a two-dimensional being lives in that two dimensions, what understand that it isn't flat. So you only experience a number of dimensions your brain can perceive. So similar to this, although we live in three-dimensional space, that space is curved in a fourth dimension. What's going to make it a bit more confusing is that it's not just a straight curve. It twists back on itself, very much like a Möbius strip. So if I get a little strip of paper, and I actually twist it in the middle and rejoin it, you've got this strange bend in it. I wouldn't say space is like this because it's more four-dimensional, but you can understand what I'm talking about. If you actually take this curve and twist it back on itself, you have something that seems to like go all the way around, but when it comes back, it's on the other side. Now, if you're a two-dimensional being, you wouldn't see a difference between this side and this side. It's all one surface. However, those of you who actually looked at my Ultimate Healing also realize that when a wave goes round, it goes through 180-degree phase change. So something is somehow different. And it's this curve. Yeah. So this kind of curvature of space and time is what gives rise to paradoxes. I'm trying to explain some of those. I'm going to use to explain bifurcation, tachyon, and things like that. But to understand the paradox of time, I'm going to use an example from physics. We had a common one called the grandfather paradox. What it means is that if a guy goes back in time to meet his grandfather before his parents were born and kills him, he can't exist. Therefore, he can't go back in time and kill him, so he didn't kill him after all, so he was born. So this is a confusing paradox going on, that you know. But if you actually understand that time is twisted and these paradoxes coexist, but on the opposite sides of the curve, both exist at once. He did kill his grandfather, and he didn't, therefore exists, and he doesn't. Because these paradoxes are now related to each other on the same side of the curve, it means he has to kill his grandfather in order to exist. So what we have in time is these paradoxes that coexist. We only experience one reality, yet they both exist. Just like in my blog, I was trying to show you how we only experience three dimensions. Therefore, we only experience a four-dimensional event in slices. It all exists at once. We don't always see all that exists. So when time is curved this way, there is a paradox, but we only experience half of it. This is basically what gives rise to bifurcation. Consider that every kind of crisis point is a split. See, in evolution, evolution is geared towards us for our survival. And any being which kind of out-competes its competition becomes too good at surviving and sometimes destroys its environment and therefore destroys itself. This has to actually mutate to a new form in order to survive. That new form can either be more complex or more primitive. So any crisis point, there's a bifurcation. It hasn't just happened once, it's happened every time there's an evolutionary crisis. What happens then, on this curve, both exist. On one side you've got the more complex, and the other side you've got the more primitive. The reason they're both good at surviving is because when you look at how it works, if you become more complex, we actually understand the whole process of how we destroy environments and actually learn to deal with it and become like more enlightened and intelligent and actually adapt so we don't destroy environment. We'll become primitive and go back to destroying society and come like cavemen again, where everything goes back to the beginning and you don't get the destruction of the environment because you're not so evolved after all. So you see there's two possibilities here. And actually each point of bifurcation both exist. If this happened several times before, it means there's going to be several parallel realities right now. Each time we succeeded in creating a miracle, mankind's evolved. And the last time we know about this is what we call Atlantis. They say this was all destroyed, but actually, although we have evolved from Atlantis destroyed, therefore we have to go back to the start again, there's a separate reality where Atlantis succeeded. Therefore, right now, there's another separate reality where everything's living wonderfully. And hopefully, if we actually do it right this time, we get to join them, or those who are actually on that side will. We don't do this together. We all decide which side we're going to be on. It's an individual thing where you place your consciousness, which side of that curve you actually experience, because they both exist at once. So that gives you an idea of how bifurcation works. It's because we have this paradox in time, because of its loop, because it's twisting the Möbius strip. So is that clear so far? Now, I also want to explain how this applies to tachyon. Tachyon is supposed to be a particle that travels faster than light. And yet, we all know from physics that you can't accelerate any speed of light because it takes infinite energy to get there. You can't travel faster than light. But when they actually work out the equation, when you have this kind of curve where you have to take infinite energy to actually gradually accelerate towards the light, you never quite get there. Other side of the speed of light, the curve goes the other way. It'll take infinite energy to slow it down towards the speed of light. So you see, these exist. If you're faster than light or slower than light, and you can't meet. So as we know, this kind of paradox exists because we have tachyon. Although it's supposed to be a parallel universe, it exists in the universe because it isn't really separate. It's the other side of that same twist. Natural fact, although they say you can't travel faster than light, the universe is traveling faster than light. It's a big paradox in physics. So they talk about the Big Bang, because when they look at how the things move in the universe, they're all moving away from a central point, which is supposed to have started about 13.8 billion years ago. The speed at which things move out show how far it is from the center. And actually, part of the universe is traveling faster than light. We don't see it, because if something is traveling faster than light, the light from it can't reach us. Because by the time it's got to here, the light is only reaching to so far, it can never actually reach us. We can't see anything traveling away from us faster than light. But also physics tells us that all motion is relative. If you haven't got anything to compare to, you can't tell you're moving. If you're out in space and there's nothing to compare you, there's no movement. So since if all motion is relative, if you've got, say, something traveling at speed of light that way, like a beam of light, and another beam of light traveling that way at speed of light, then relative to each other, the other one's moving away at twice the speed of light. So this is where, again, the paradox doesn't quite seem to hold up. They talk about nothing can travel faster than light because of this curve. What actually happens, the universe is travelling faster than light. So if you look at it again in the Möbius strip, you've got two realities. You're travelling either faster than light or slower than light. The two exist together. So tachyon didn't seem to exist for people until they thought about it. This happens in physics quite a lot. Even with quantum quarks, for instance, the smallest particle, that's a fraction of a proton. They didn't exist until they actually invented them. It's suddenly they observed them, they were because everything exists in a state of potential until it's observed. So only after they brought this idea that of a tachyon universe did they start observing tachyons. So everything can be experienced once you put your attention there, even if it doesn't seem to exist in our reality yet. So interesting about paradox is you can experience either side. We're not really fixed in one. It's actually good news in some ways because we can choose where we're going. If there's going to be this bifurcation happening where you can become more complex, more primitive, you actually be later to choose which side you're on. By resonating with that future, making it real, thinking in terms of that and looking for it, and that's where you're going. It's that simple, really. I mean, when I created my tachyon empowerments, I very much had to work with being able to visualize multidimensionally, because you don't actually see light itself in less than five dimensions. I mentioned this in my blog as well, that's actually, when you look at light, there's actually a vibration in the fifth dimension. And I actually measured it. It's actually a really tiny amount in the fifth dimension, measure of so many nanometers, but it's there. Wouldn't exist if there wasn't a fifth dimension to it. In order to understand some of these concepts then in physics, you have to actually look at more than four dimensions anyway. So it's by understanding these curvature of space and this paradox that we understand things like tachyon, bifurcation. A lot of people are not actually seeing how this is possible, but actually these common concepts in physics. Of course, we all use tachyon now. You can even buy a tachyon instrument. Some people don't even know what it is, because a particle traveling faster than light is, by traditional science, shouldn't exist in our universe. But when you understand the kind of nature of time and space, we see the paradoxes do coexist. This is also very important for understanding our futures and how we're creating them. I've pointed out quite often in my courses, such as the Dragon course, we look at the future causality and the reading out of any futures, that we have these double quantum waves between here and the future. There are always several possible futures. Each one of those futures is linked to us by a double quantum wave. We are creating the future is creating us. Now, notice the past doesn't come into it. Everything you're creating right now is depending on what these double quantum waves, where you place your attention, the futures you're resonating with. The past has absolutely nothing to do with it. This is an important bit to get. You're not where you are going because of your past. It has nothing to do with it. We can choose to hang on to our past and that'll affect the future we're creating, but it's not the past that is creating it. It's entirely down to our consciousness, where we're placing attention. So actually, the further we go in physics, the more we realize that this kind of metaphysical thinking is really real. A lot of people can't quite understand how this works when they're caught in this three-dimensional world with kind of upward causality, where past is leading to future. If there's a cause and effect going on, then we always think we're the way we are because something happened in our past. But let's look at what the past is really about. It's nothing like a backdrop to explain our reality and ourselves in greater depth. It's like a backdrop to a theatre. The backdrop, it gets a bit boring. If something is a backdrop to your reality, it gives it more depth, more explanation. So use our past all the time to actually to explain ourselves. Say something about us, put it into an image, into a picture. But it is nothing more than a backdrop. It is not cause. The cause is always to do with the futures we're resonating with, and there's always many possible futures trying to happen at any moment. Ones we're feeding, what's the most likely to happen. Actually, when we get to the future, it's actually somehow a mixture of several of them, according to how much attention each one has got. So in other words, as you get to that point when the future is now one, they've somehow all collapsed into one. Before they're observed, before they're here, there are several possibilities. Nothing is quite there until it's observed. Now, this also means that until it's actually observed, it is not too late to do something about it. As a simple example, suppose you've applied for a job, the letter comes to the door, saying whether you've got it or not. If you haven't opened it yet, it doesn't say yes or no. It means you've still got time to do meditation to make sure you got the job. Then if you open it, the answer can be different. Nothing is there until it's observed. So up until that moment you observe it, you can still change it. Once it's actually happened and it's now here, now you decide to which way letter you are in. And just like with the letter, it could be yes or no. That's again this loop. And this Möbius strip, you've got this twist in it, where on one side is a yes and the other side is a no. You've got that paradox. And so until you decide which side you're in, both exist. So once it's observed, you've got the yes or no, that's where you are. Until then, you're in this paradox. It could be either. You could choose to resonate with either one. So still get the very last observation where it's real, it is still changeable. You see, the present moment is a very special one when you think about it. Well, I'm sure you have thought about it. There's a lot of people talking about how being in the present moment is so important. Yet what they don't tell you is that you can't be in the present moment because you're resonating with the future all the time. If something doesn't have a future, you can't experience it. So yes, we don't want to be caught in our past. We have to use our present and actually understand the magic of that moment, because that's a point of condensation where something is now chosen in the way that you were in. It's always right now. Choice is happening now. Yet change is created, begins in the future, but happens now. That's a subtle paradox about change itself. It's created, begins in the future, but it happens now. So the past isn't causing a change. The futures you're choosing to resonate with, whether they've happened yet, well, they haven't happened yet, but whether they're going to happen or not, it's still in potential. They're all affecting you now. When you look to your futures and shut them up and change them, before they even happen, you're changing now. Change happens now as you make a choice. It might take time for it to manifest, for this actually to be here observable, but actually the change is happening as you make the choice. If I choose a particular future, I'm now acting towards that future. My thoughts are different. Everything about me is different, so that future can manifest. My thinking, my actions take me towards that. Making that choice is already changing me. In order to change your reality, you have to change yourself first, because it's all a double quantum wave. It's all about transformation of the self, which then transforms your reality. Or rather, they both happen at once. So you're understanding this so far?
Yeah, maybe. One question that I would just like to gain clarification on, you said that until you open the letter, it can be a yes or it can be a no. Both possibilities exist. Mm-hmm. And then you do the meditation. What are you referring to, the weeding and cultivating futures meditation? Sorry.
Any meditation of trying to manifest what you want. Okay. Whatever magic you want to do to make sure it says yes and you've got the job. You do it then before you open the letter. If the letter comes, it is not too late because you haven't opened it yet.
And Joyce is saying that she finds it hard to make choices.
This is an important thing to learn. See, the further we go towards higher magic, we find that choice is the only technique. All the rituals and things we do in the processes are ways of activating the will to the position where our choice becomes powerful. Once you're in that place of power, choice happens. It requires no more technique, a choice, and there it happens. Therefore, we have to get good at making choices. And there's some advice I can give about this. We can look at different types of choice, different dimensions of choice. First of all, let's look at what right choice is. How do you know choice is right? You don't know where it's going to take you. You don't even know what the outcome is going to be. What makes it right is that it responds to the human graces. What comes most naturally to us as flight does to an eagle? The graces are to make choices. So there's one already. You'd have to learn to understand it's natural in you if you want to make choices. To learn new skills, to expand yourself, to have fun, and to seek the unfathomable. If you're doing those, choice is right. Now we have wise choice. What does wisdom mean? It means being able to go beyond logic and reason without losing sight of them. You may find that something in the things in the world are going way beyond logic and reason, but they lose their tether. You don't want to lose sight of logic and reason. That's wisdom. Also, we have willed choice. That's to distinguish between will choice and a choice of whim. A choice of whim is asking why not. A choice of will is asking why. So it can even be a very simple thing, like a friend might ask me, do you want to go to the cinema? A whim is, oh, I'm nothing better to do, why not? There's no will involved in that. Will is saying, ask all the questions, why? Do I want to spend time with this person? Do I want to see that film? Do I enjoy the popcorn in that theatre? All these little details. Oh yeah, I've got a real choice now. I want to do it. So you see, all these things can actually give you an idea of how to make choice. Is it willed? Is it wise? Is it right? So take the human graces. Are you going to learn new skills? Are you going to expand yourself? Are you going to make new choices? Are you going to have fun? Are you going to seek the unfathomable? Choose those things. Also think about why you want it. And also be rational, but go beyond rational, beyond logical reason, without actually losing sight of them. If you do those things, then you get a very good choice. Making choices that are willed, right, and wise are going to be very powerful. These are choices that could actually affect your destiny, where you're going, and they're going to be very, very positive. You can't avoid choices. They're around you all the time. But sometimes you dismiss them. Look at different ways people have of not making a choice, like flipping a coin or asking somebody else, rather than actually make a choice, let's give it to fate somehow and let somebody else make a choice for me. Now, use these things, will, wisdom, the rightness, by understanding human graces. Also, we need to understand the dimensions of choice. We have a one-dimensional choice defines the point. A two-dimensional choice defines the area. As a simple example, when you choose to be healthy, that's why you're here, obviously, when you come to these courses, that's one reason to be healthy. That's a point. The area, the things you do to be healthy, like eat healthy, look after your energy field, have enough rest, exercise, meditate, all these other things. They define the area. If you don't make two-dimensional choices back at one-dimensional choice, or vice versa, you will not maintain it. You see, if I choose a healthy diet without choosing to be healthy, I'll be one thinking, why am I doing this? I'll lose it. The other, if I say, I'm going to choose to be healthy now, but don't do anything about it and don't eat healthy and all the other things, I'm not going to be healthy. So each one-dimensional choice must be backed up with two-dimensional choices. And thirdly, the three-dimensional choice is one that has depth, has given you a real meaning. You understand why you're doing it. It takes you to what life is all about. Like with this one-dimensional choice of being healthy and two-dimensional choice of all the things I do around it. Why? What is it going to take me towards? How does it help me fulfill my destiny? If I'm healthy, then maybe I'll be better at finding my power and creating my reality and all the things I want to do in my life. Then it's aligned to my true will. That's the deep choice, the three-dimensional one. And some of these three-dimensional choices then colour every the choice you make in your life. They're the profound choices. So maybe you need to look at those first. What is your life going to be all about? Here to find power, here to find love, here to expand yourself and have fun by stretching your strengths. If you start with those, they'll colour the other choices, then you can look at your two-dimensional, one-dimensional choices. Then if you make them wise, right, and willed, then there's real magic. You choose, and it's going to happen. That's how powerful choice can be when you really think about it. But, you know, this is a good question because most people don't know how to make choices. They don't know all this. Simple and explain, though, isn't it? Otherwise, people say make a choice and you'd have no idea how to make a choice. It's like flipping a coin. I'll just flip a coin on that one. That's not really choice. You let the coin make the choice for you. Okay.
Thank you very much. And I know you've talked about choice many times before, but there's always something to learn every time I hear it. So going over to some questions with regards to the article that you wrote around this topic. First question is, you say that when we discreate from the fourth dimension, the whole of that experience.
Exactly.
Then why are there layers? Why do we have to keep discreating what we have already seemingly discreated?
You won't forget the whole thing. This is a problem. When people try and do it in layers, they're not discreating. That's why I say when you actually start the process, you must expand through all the layers. So what's going to happen is like there might be one event that's happened in your life. You go into the emotion, realize this emotion is repeated, happened before. There's other emotions around it. But suppose we go through a memory of maybe of a heartbreak or something. I feel pain, I feel depression, I feel loneliness, and I feel angry. One emotion leads to another as I expand. So I start working on my emotions to go to more than one. Then the last time it happened, I was heartbroken back then as well. And then I felt angry and everything. As I keep expanding, I get more and more and more until I see a whole thing laid up before me. It's not one heartbreak. There's a pattern all my life. I was heartbroken then. It makes me happy in a certain way, so it's happy again because I don't know how to connect with a person. I close off and whatever it is. I see a whole creation all at once. This happens as you expand. See, if I actually put it on a plane and get like a piece of paper, if I'm in the middle of it and there's a creation all around me, in the middle of it, you experience a piece of it. When you expand, you go through more and more emotions, more and more layers. When you get to the edge of it, you've seen the whole thing. You're kind of on the edge, you're outside, not in it anymore. That's the point of dissociation. That's when I can recognize this isn't me, it's my creation. I see the whole creation, a pattern that's gone on all my life. And it will go in the future if I'm looking at it, because I can see how my behavior is recreating it. That's the point where I see a creation as a whole. By the time I got to there, I'm out of the emotion. I'm dissociating already because I've gone through them all. The whole thing, all the different events, all the emotion about the whole thing. I'm not discreating pieces. I get to the whole thing at once. Because when you expand, you will do that. You must keep expanding to get there, or you haven't reached the point of discreation. So when you get to that point, you can actually go into fourth dimensions by expanding. Just on this sheet of paper from the middle towards the edges, I'm expanding my consciousness, therefore reaching edges of that dimension. I reach the edge of my creation, I'm now in four dimensions. I might not be looking at how many dimensions I've got, but that's where I am. Because I'm now seeing not all the slices, I'm seeing the whole thing. One pattern that's gone on through time, and it keeps repeating itself. At that point, I've gone beyond the emotion. I simply see it before for me, but as it's not been to my creation. I'm not emotional about it anymore, I can simply define it without judgment. Let it go and it dissolves, it's gone forever. If you discreate the whole thing, it doesn't come back. You don't have to do it again. It's done. It's one creation. That's why it's important to get this. You won't discreate it in slices. This way it comes back because people haven't done the whole thing. They've tried one piece.
To mind then when you explain this is when you go to a layer and then you go to another layer and then you go to another layer, are you edging towards discreating the whole thing?
Or you are.
Every time you welcome, you notice and you welcome a new layer, it's almost like, nah, you didn't get it. You got to start again.
You only get that if you think you've got to the end. You must keep expanding. You don't think, you don't try and fix a point, well, I must get to the end now. No, you keep expanding until you're there naturally because you've run out. You see this is a shift. There's a shift of awareness here. We're not going through layers. I'm also dissociating gradually because when I see the whole thing, I'm not in it anymore. I'm not in the emotion. I've been through the emotion and now I'm looking at it from the outside, seeing the whole thing. If I'm still going through emotions, I'm still in it. And I keep expanding and expanding and expanding by welcoming and welcoming all the emotions to actually get to a point where I've gone through all the emotion. And then I'm seeing this thing in front of me, this whole creation. It's a natural part of a process. So as long as you don't try and shortcut it, you'll get there. Don't try and think, I have must discreate it now. Keep expanding until it happens naturally. There's no more. You got to the end. So in each situation, you welcome the emotion and you keep expanding by welcoming, going through more layers because they're coming up. What you're doing is welcoming, expanding. You naturally shift. You see, we are multidimensional beings. We keep ourselves in three dimensions where we lock ourselves off, limit experiences and don't want to look anymore. As soon as you begin to welcome things rather than suppress them, you're becoming more. You will shift to the fourth and fifth dimensions. Start with the fourth. At the point of discreation, you're four-dimensional. Because you're seeing a whole creation, not the slices.
You've kind of answered. So what then needs to be done to genuinely and permanently discreate that which we don't want, including all layers? So let's say you notice another layer comes back and you're just like, oh, for God's sake, I thought I'd finished with this. Is there something you can do in that moment to say, I'm done, I want all of this discreated?
You don't say that. You keep welcoming it. See, not to say you've got to a point of resistance. I don't want to do this anymore, but I've had enough. I wanted to go now. That's what you have to stop doing right at the beginning if you want to welcome things. That's not a welcoming, is it? Even the thing, oh, the fed up of this happened again, is part of a memory. This has happened before. Anybody felt this way before? This happens. You've had something happen many times. You go through those feelings too. Oh, no, not again. I thought this was gone. I thought it was over. And actually, that's going to come up too as part of a process. That's also a memory. So you keep going. You keep welcoming. Even when you feel, oh, not again, welcome that. That's part of the memory. When you keep welcoming all the emotions, eventually you get to a point where they run out. You don't cut off and say, that's enough now. Because that says now resisting. You stopped expanding. Now, you might have enough one day, then you carry the next day. If you wait, it'll come back up at some point. So keep the process going, keep welcoming. Now, have you seen when I give them demonstrations, we just take people hot seats and things, you know, it does come to an end. It can take a while, but you keep going, it might take, some people take a few minutes, some people take half an hour. If you keep welcoming, you go through layers until you get there. But you have to keep welcoming, not be in a hurry. Take it as long as it takes. Which is why in the point, all day we go on for, say, 3-4 hours. It might take that long. The idea is to keep welcoming, don't say letting up and going. If that's where you feel welcome, that too, that's part of a process. You welcome everything until there's no more.
So our present is the sum of all the possible futures impacting us. The futures that actually happen are the ones that get the most attention. But this isn't necessarily true. Many times I have visualized, daydreamed, used the manifestation machine, but the future I am focusing on hasn't been the one I've experienced. Is this because my expectation is out of whack, or which is stronger, focus or expectation?
They're all related, but the important thing here is to discreate the other ones. So you're not thinking about them doesn't mean they're actually being disengaged. They're pulling at you. They affect your behavior. They affect how you think and feel. This is why you do the self-reflection process, to actually look at where our attention really is. Because we actually deny our real attention. We try and hide it. We say, well, I want this. Therefore, I admit that I'm actually working towards something else. You look at the three actions. I might say, I want this, but my actions are taking me to somewhere else because that future is still calling. It doesn't go away until you actively disengage it. It means you have to go there. Feel it, discreate it, redirect energy somewhere else. It's not enough just to focus on the positive because those other ones are pulling at you. You actually have to go there and actively disengage them, not just ignore them, hope they go away, because they don't. You discreate them.
And cultivating futures meditation, right?
That's right. You can do that, but also that's one technique. As I was pointing out, in the end, when you get this, the only technique is choice. Everything is easy. Might be different ways of doing it, but the important thing is that they are there and they've taken energy. You would have stopped that energy taking from them. You would have dissolved and taken energy back up somewhere else one way or another. Wisdom cultivating meditation was one way of doing it. Discreation is another way. If I'm seeing how case and negative pattern try to manifest and I go into it and welcome it and expand it to discreate, that's also doing it. But the important thing to realise is that there are possible futures. They're all pulling at you. You don't just focus on one. You actually have to disengage the ones you don't want and discreate them.
Paradoxes. The question is, are these paradoxes in time always dualistic?
It seems to be when we're looking at four dimensions, we'll actually realise later on that there are a lot more. Like even when you look at this Vedan cultivating futures, realise there's several possible futures trying to happen. So it's more than duality, there's lots of them. Many paradoxes are dual, because things tend to be almost opposite to each other. This happens in many areas of life, even like with psychology, when you look at coping mechanisms. Whenever there's a major conflict inside, our coping mechanisms tend to be two possible ones, which actually are polar opposites of each other. A simple example is to look at the common things like in love, when people are trying to actually hide certain conflicts between the social conditioning and the genetic programming. Now, for instance, it can be different for men and women. So women have this instinct to actually suddenly want to go and have children, or they're running out of time. They want to get a partner quickly because they're running out of time. The clock's running. Yet at the same time, the thought is that I want to quit my perfect partner, but I'm running out of time. There's a conflict. So they're two polar opposites in behavior. Testing or training. Imagine you're going for a job, but they want to try and find the right person for the job. Either you simply pick one and train them. We test lots of them. You get the kind of testers and the ones who then try and teach and train you. Notice how people do this in relationships. Some women will grab one person and actually stay with them till the end because they keep trying to change them. Others will be always looking at somebody else. I don't think this one is fine. If this one's better, jump from one to another. You get the testers. Then you get the investors who say, no, I'm staying with this one until I'm really sure they're the wrong one. I'll keep trying to change them. That's my challenge. Notice how you do this, one or the other, either testing or trying to make them something else. Always trying to train them in some way, trying to change them to what you want. Investing in them, basically. Testing or investing. Two opposites, and it's either one or the other. When you look at how you choose your partner, there isn't any other thing in between, it's one or the other. When you really look at that, you see, yes, this is strange. We have two opposite things that we take to choose between. But it's also a duality. You could say on this kind of time scale, you're doing both, but you exist in one or the other. sometimes you need a little bit of one. You've got to test them and now it's time to actually invest or stick with this one and change them. Maybe you'll change. So it's an example of how it works in psychology. There are these opposites happening. They tend to be in pairs, which are polar opposites. Then in some levels, when we get into higher dimensions, we're looking at creation and so on, it starts getting complex. You have to go into fifth dimensions. The reason it gets more complex is because time does change in higher dimensions. You see, if we take, for instance, looking at my four-dimensional image when you're actually passing through time, because we have three dimensions, we see the one dimension as linear. Supposing, on the other hand, that we now go into fifth dimension, we see three. Now, time is two-dimensional. So having a straight line like a Mobius strip, it'll be a flat surface. So, for instance, I've got chains of events. In a four-dimensional time space, time is linear. Therefore, if I have a different timeline from here to here, and I've got another one going from here to here, I have to go back to the start to go across. That's how to draw this. Supposing, for instance, I've got the event. I have to go back. I can't jump across from one to the other. In five-dimensional space, you can, because time isn't linear. It's two-dimensional. You can go, I have a timeline going there, timeline going there, timeline going there. I can go from there to there. I can jump around. This is what you're doing when you actually really cultivate futures, because all these possible futures are out there, all these timelines exist. I don't have to go back to the beginning to go back to start again. I can jump between them. So you see, when you get to five dimensions, you get to more possibilities. In six dimensions, you're going to get even more. It gets confusing then, but we'll talk about that another time. Build you up to the fourth and fifth dimensions first. I mean, next month we do the multidimensional self. We go a bit further with this to extend the different powers you can gain from each of these kind of different levels you expand into. Your ability to master these metaphysical principles. So at first it seems they're kind of paradoxical opposites. Later you begin to realize there's many possible futures. You don't have to stick to the two that the world is presenting to you anymore. See, bifurcation is a species thing because we are evolving and therefore there's going to be a crisis point and we go one way or the other. In your personal choice, you're not limited by the crowd anymore. You're creating your own reality. You've got many possible futures. And you can create new possibilities too. You don't have to stick to those ones. You can actually create everything you don't want and create everything you do want and end up totally fashioning your own life. This is what magic's about, is constant crafting of your life in every possible way. You create everything you want, discreate everything you don't want. That is going to require an expansion, though, to actually really be able to see how to do that.
Primitive, do you mean complex is going into artificial intelligence?
Not necessarily. That's not complex either. Which is complex because of what this artificial intelligence outsmart the people. But complex, where you're not looking for a simple answer, you have to think about things. Nature is complex, you look at it. People would like to be simple, but it isn't. You look at the people that are complex, you look at how their deep emotions go and how your responses you get according to behaviour. To figure it all out is quite complex. When people want to be simple, they just use simple rules, you do it this way, and if it doesn't work, they'll use force. People are often using force because they don't understand how to get proper responses because they're not complex enough. Force is primitive. I don't know how to do it, I'll just bully my way through. A good example, actually remember from The Simpsons. There's one time where they had these bikers staying and Marge was kind of cleaning their headbands. And they're saying to her, how do you get so clean? I've tried punching it, hitting it, swearing it, nothing works. That's how it is, you know, if you're actually limited in your awareness, the only way is force. That's primitive. Because actually looking how to make things work is complex. So people talk about things like domination as different from dominion. Dominion doesn't mean enforcing things, that's domination, force, but to dominate the other, I force things till I get my way. Dominion is understanding how everything works, how to get the right response. But how I talk to each person that's going to inspire them and motivate them, it's complex, isn't it? This is what a good leader does. Now to get the best of everybody, not by forcing you, but by actually knowing how to do things, understanding you so I get the right response. Understanding the whole to get everybody's right response is complex. With that complexity, you go back to the primitive force.
You say that everything depends on the future and not on the past, but you do teach us about healing traumas which come from the past. And there are things going on about about karma, past lives, soul loss, etc. How does this tie in with all of this? When do things in our life come from the future, and when are we still stuck in the past?
We choose to be stuck in the past, but this doesn't mean it's being created there. You see, when we're discreating, remember we're looking at something four-dimensional. It's not really stuck in the past. As I pointed out, you don't actually discreate it by doing it in layers. You have to see the whole. You're observing the whole, not going into the past and not being stuck there. So when you're still blaming and never engaging the emotions of the past and the affected behavior, you're sticking yourself there, and that is a choice. See, we actually use these things consciously. I'm just trying to give examples of this and how it works. You see, as I said, it's like the past is a backdrop. We use it. Now, some things we don't bother with. See, if you think of how many thoughts you've got in your past, how many thoughts do you have in a day? If you add them up, there's lots of them, aren't there? How many thoughts do you have in an hour? Your day, you've had thousands of multiple, how many days in your lifetime, there's like millions of possible thoughts in your background that you could call upon. Many events. But you choose them selectively. Your parents might say when they ask a kid, you'll never amount to anything. I'll hold on to that because I can punish you for years to come and be angry with everything. Then over there, my parents said, don't have sex before marriage. Nobody listens to that one because there's no fun in it. Do you see how we select these things and how we respond? What actually happens, we choose a future, then we go back and add a cause. Because the cause isn't really in the past, but if we actually admit where the cause is, we won't get away with it. You see, for instance, suppose I'm in self-pity. I might say, it's because of the past. No, it's not. Look at what it does. It punishes somebody, it manipulates, it avoids responsibility, gets people to treat you with gloves, you don't carry responsibilities, you get away with things. But it wouldn't work if you admitted that. If I'm sitting in the corner feeling sorry for myself, you come and say, what's the matter? I'm manipulating you. It's not going to work, is it? So I'm going to say, oh, well, my parents gave me a hard time, my wife gave me a hard time. You feel sorry for me, so I've got you under my control, eating out of my hand. That's how you use it. In order to get away with these things, you've got to nobilize your past, make it seem real. There's a lot of energy when you look at it. All these tricks we play to actually get our way through manipulation, instead of just creating it, which is much easier. When people forget their creators, they actually spend so much energy in these manipulative games, when actually it's much less energy to actually create what you want. That's how stuck we get. When you look at how much we do to get what we want, you realize it's actually much easier to create with magic. It's much less effort than we used to. I was just going to say that the first thing we need to admit to get this is that future is that force is in the future. Part of the game of holding on to past causality is helping us keep the excuses so we don't go through our transformation. We don't create what we want. We get away with our negative patterns of self-pity and all those things, all the childish games. So the first thing is to admit, of course, in the future. If you work from that point of view, you'll get through it all.
So where can I find out information about the fourth and fifth dimensions? Do you have any recommendations?
Just my blog. I wrote that as a basic understanding of what dimensions are like. And get that. If you read it a few number of times so it sinks in, you'll begin to understand. There's no point in saying too much more about it because that's how it is. It's trying to get you to see something that's beyond our brain's ability to visualize. So we see three dimensions. So say it's just a two-dimensional being will only see this one surface and then see another dimension as to experience it through time. This is how we actually experience fourth dimension through time. And so it's trying to get that. Start with that, because later we're going to talk about higher dimensions beyond the fourth and the fifth, go to the sixth and seventh and so on. You might be asking, when does this all stop? How many dimensions are there? 18.
Left. I've got a couple of pre-submitted questions that I'd like to get to, which are non-related.
That's okay.
Please keep your responses succinct, Peter, so I can fit them all in. That would be great in the 7 minutes we have. So okay. The first question is clarity on soul connections, twin flame, soulmate, etc. Is there any difference to these kind of connections, or are they simply a deeply resonating connection at the end of the day?
It can be many things, you see. We can't really imagine we created in pairs because everything comes from one source. We're all one. However, there will be somebody you resonate with better. And this is actually not really coming from any spiritual kind of wisdom. It's coming from our primitive instincts because we're always looking for that perfect partner. Women actually more than men. You see, the instinct is to find the alpha male because you want a strong children who are the leaders and the species goes forward. Therefore, you're always looking for that perfect partner. But our definition of perfect partner changes. On primitive level, you're looking for the strong genes, you make the alpha male. But now imagination comes in. Women are more imaginative than men because that's the stronger feminine quality, but we all have it as we evolve, becoming more of that. Now we have more imagination about what a perfect partner is going to be. That we start forming an image of what our perfect partner is. And we say, that's my soulmate. But it's something we've created. It isn't really just one soul who matches you because, you know, we learn to actually relate to everything. We're all one. We can actually form a resonance, a bond with it, with the right person if we're resonating. It's not just one person. See, this idea of one soulmate can actually really lead you up to hurt yourself, because what happens if you find your soulmate and it doesn't work? Think, oh, no hope then. If that one didn't work, nothing will. You see the kind of game you caught into that one? That you have to be responsible. Just because you've got one person soulmate turning up doesn't mean it's going to work. You still have to be responsible for your process, your blocks to intimacy, the way you understand how to treat a person to make sure it all works and, you know, be responsible for it. That's what makes it work. If you think it's going to work just with your soulmate, you probably won't, because you're not being responsible for it. You're going to make mistakes, not do the right things, not treat them well enough, not give them the right attention, whatever. Or if you take things for granted, you start destroying the love. And unfortunately, a lot of people looking for soulmates want to take it for granted. Got the right person, problems are over, and now it's forever. Doesn't work that way. So you make a lot of big mistakes looking for a soulmate. You have to be responsible. Yes, there can be a person who matches you better than everybody else. And then you really realize this one is worth giving up all the others for, because this one's making me happy. But I still have to work on this and actually build something. If that doesn't work, I might find another one who matches me on many levels. Isn't it just one? Maybe there is one person in the world, if you actually look at them all, who's better than all the others, because this is the closest one resonating with you. Another lifetime, it might be somebody else. It's not saying that this is all the same soul that you always have to be with. It doesn't work that way, because we've all won. You can find the right partner to unite with and go further and learn co-creation, understanding, and expand the love. It doesn't have to be one person. There are many possibilities. You just have to find somebody who's willing. This is the most important point. Something I've discovered along my way as well, with a manifested partners in my own way. The things I think are going to make me happy are not actually what does it. What makes a relationship actually work is actually the understanding, the responsibility, ability to actually communicate and, you know, work with it and go forward. Be responsible for it, basically. Be responsible for love, which means you don't take it for granted. You have to expand and be aware and communicate all the time. If any two people who need to do that can actually build a soulmate-like relationship, because they go very deep. That's the important things. You can actually go wrong by looking for one soulmate. That's coming from primitive instinct, which says, I'd like to find the alpha male or that whatever it is, which that's where it's coming from. It's not really a spiritual drive at all.
I've also heard recently the concept of washing souls. Please could you explain what this is? Is this possible?
Washing, well, washing just means cleaning, really. It's not really going to take you in the water with a scrubbing brush. It's not like that. But water is a powerful symbol of cleansing anyway, so quite often the washing is on a soul level. It's used in voodoo a lot with what we call the laftet, the washing of the head. They actually use the water on the head when they actually take your impurities away and initiate you and so on. So, you know, the washing of the soul is simply about cleansing. Water can be a medium, but it's actually that symbolic.
An energetic resonance level, and if it's a high resonance level, why would it need washing?
One thing is our creation. Remember, everything we can define is not us, it's our creation, because pure awareness is undefinable and adimensional. For anything we don't label is our creation. Even the soul, the spirit, God is all our creation. So if you look at what a soul is, well, we can actually divide things into in our evolution. It's not God, it's not, therefore not the highest. It's a level beyond the physical, beyond the aura, beyond the etheric. So if we look at our way back to source, we didn't come in one go because it's too much of a shock. Beyond the physical body, we have an aura. Now, the aura creates the body, not the other way around. It's a more subtle level where the blueprint is, which decides how the body is going to form. Beyond the aura, we have an etheric body, different again. It's a more subtle vibration again. beyond that, we have what we call a truer self. Typically, it's not the name for it, but it's more true than this. This is the illusion that we created out of this blueprint. The truer self holds more about who we really are before we actually formed limitations in our personalities. And above that, we have the soul and spirit. Now, if you have both, there's two things moving together here that seem to co-create. One is seen as more feminine, which would mean to go into the depth of feeling. One is more masculine, which means it's soaring, stretching, reaching more into the light. That's what that comes down to. So these are the parts of ourself which go to the depth of our feeling to find out, to know who we really are, and reach higher, always expanding into that oneness with God. It's not God, but it's trying to expand there. That too is a vehicle then, an energetic body. More subtle than the etheric, more subtle than error into yourself and so on. It's more subtle again. It's hard to measure in terms of physics because physics doesn't define these energies. We can measure things like etheric because it's kind of electrical in nature. You're almost then trying to define other energies in terms of the quantum field and a unified field theory and so on, but it's like you go beyond, levels beyond the science can understand. You're simply going beyond definition. But pure awareness is beyond any definition. It's beyond anything we can think of, anything we can conceive. It just is. It can't be created, can't be destroyed, it doesn't end. It's beyond time and space. The soul is something we created out of that. Naturally, because it's our creation, isn't. It isn't God. It can be contaminated because it's energy. However, it doesn't mean that when somebody thinks the soul is contaminated, it doesn't mean that's true. They often say this when they're always contaminated, or their etheric body is contaminated, or something else is contaminated. It's not always the soul when people say it is. But it's possible it can be contaminated too. If the kind of contamination goes deep enough, it reaches soul level. Because it's going to a deep part of our unconscious. Remember, the soul holds the depth of feeling. It's going to be related to the unconscious. Let's look at how we form these entities and things, for instance. So if you have a law, when we have a belief, it goes to the subconscious. If you reinforce it, it becomes a law, it goes to the unconscious. Where if we try and break it, we punish ourselves. Or even deeper, it becomes personified, it becomes a demon. Even deeper into the depth of the unconscious, it becomes more plant-like and it spreads like a vine and grows. So you're going deeper and deeper layers altogether. So we'll get to the soul level. It spreads into the soul when it starts forming new patterns out of the soul. It's mixing with it and contaminating it. Because the soul's energy can also be used to create bad things because it's creative energy. So the negativity can go down to that level as you create these different demons. So yes, the soul can be damaged that way. It's a greater depth of damage. Yeah. Higher self is higher again, even more subtle. The higher self is a part of us which actually knows that it's one with God and is infinite and beyond time and space. It knows the whole plan of all that exists. It knows all our past life and future lives all at once. It doesn't experience time linearly like we do. It knows all its different lifetimes, its past and future all at once, even its parallel lives. You see, we have both past and parallel lives. If you're in the same space between time as a past life, the same time but different space, we call it parallel life, because we, as a higher being, when we come into time and space, we spread ourselves throughout time and space to experience it all. Our higher self experiences it all at once. We repeat to experience it linearly. That's beyond time and spirit even. To understand how they fit together, an image I use isn't very glamorous. It's the image of a pond full of frog spawn. It's if we want little tadpoles, little bit of consciousness. There's a bit of jelly around it, which is the subconscious. It's sticky. Contains a lot of our memories. There's all these different tadpoles in it, all little bits of jelly with around them, all the different lifetimes with their own bit of subconscious around them. The pond they're in can be the higher self. Yet there's a soul and spirit watching over them all, trying to help them all through their lives as parts within that higher self. So that's sort of one image I'd like to use to explore them.
Today, if that is possible, in our linear experience. Yeah. We've just gone past.
Yeah.
So hopefully we will be seeing some of you on the workshop that will be happening in 30 minutes. The link has gone in the chat. For those of you who have not bought the session or are not part of the membership, you can do so. Those of you who are part of the membership already, you have received the link to join. The link has also been put in the MeWe groups. So please do make sure that you register so that you can get the joining link. And if your question has not been asked today, please do pop it in the MeWe group and then Peter can respond there, because obviously we have run out of time. right now. So, Peter, thank you very much for all of your wonderful explanations today. And we will see you in 25 minutes on the workshop. And if you're not coming to the workshop, then don't forget we've got the student Q&A call tomorrow. And you're also welcome to bring the unanswered questions to the Q&A tomorrow as well. So thank you very much, everyone. We will look forward to speaking to you in July. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend.
Okay. See you all soon. Bye.